The Elvis Cast with Grant Bench.
Hello and welcome to the continuing memories of Sue from Vegas here on The Elvis Cast. Today we're continuing listening to Sue's memories of the 70s song lists and songs she remembers hearing the King sing.
Yeah, and then the big songs that he would sing and the way his voice was so powerful. My mom didn't like those, but there was a couple of them that I really liked. I remember also in the early 70s shows when he was singing, and you hear this on the onstage record, and he was singing Simon and Garfunkel and Creedence Clearwater. I'm like, oh, I know those songs, and he's singing them. Isn't that cool to hear his version? And the other thing I remember from all of those 70s shows, whenever he had a new song out, he would sing that. And I love it. I go through the 45s. I watched him do that one. I watched him do that one. I watched him do that one. So I was right there seeing those performed. And I'd be one of the few fans, if the song wasn't that popular. But we'd be clapping. It's like, yeah, we know that song, and we want you, Elvis, to know that we know it.
Well, I got to ask you this. One of the first things you told me when we met all those years ago was, you mentioned there that your dad was the chef at the International, and it made me start to think. I wonder if her dad was able to get her to meet Elvis.
I don't know if he ever met him face to face. I remember asking my dad for an autograph. And I tried to be really nice about it because I knew it would take a lot for him to do it. And then, yes, I'll tell you the other stories that I know you know. So one morning, I get up and on the dining table was something that was turned upside down. Now, Dad's sleeping in because he didn't get home until midnight. He was working the evening shift. I flip it over and I see an autograph on an Elvis picture, and I had to cover my mouth. I'm screaming, thinking, oh, Dad did it. He got me an autograph, and I got to wait till he wakes up. I guess I got to wait till I get home from school to thank him or write him a note or something. I didn't know how I was going to communicate with him, but I thanked him over and over again for getting me this autograph. I got to tell you, there's an epilogue to this. Not too long ago, a year or so ago, I'm on a Facebook page, Elvis collectors and Elvis owned or whatever. And I would see these people assess autographs. And I know there's real and there's fake. I always believed mine was real because Colonel Parker gave it to my dad. I posted up there, always thinking I never had to worry about getting an autograph because I own one. And some of them were nice and kind, and some of them were not because they're so judgmental. But anyway, the overall consensus was that was not Elvis. I cried my guts out. And my dad did that because he loved me. And for Colonel Parker to lie to him, excuse my French, son of a bitch. Yeah. After all my dad did for him, and the relationship, casual as it was, the relationship that I thought they had. How dare he disrespect the intention of my father's request?
And it probably took a lot for him to actually ask him in the first place.
Exactly, because he works there and he doesn't want to jeopardize his job. Mm. What's funny is 2 weeks later, a fan put up his autograph, and I kindly told him, I said, I hate to tell you, this is fake. It looks just like mine. And what was number one wrong with it was the T when it said to Susie, Elvis Presley, from Elvis Presley. The Elvis Presley looked pretty damn good. I don't know who wrote the T. I've looked at the Memphis Mafia signatures. It was kind of cool when, I finally figured out, I said, okay, this is how Elvis did his tea. I look at Sonny West, and he did it the same way. Red West, he did the same way. I went, yeah, you guys were all in the same school system, so that's why you learn how to write cursive like that. And I looked at Joe Esposito, on and on, whoever I could grab, and I go, I don't know who did this, but doggone it, it's not Elvis's. I still have it.
I mean, I think it actually shows how much your dad loved you, that he wanted to get it for you no matter what.
I still have it hanging on the wall. because. But yeah, it was really, really disappointing. Okay, so on to better things. My phone keeps cutting out. I'm very sorry. Back in the early 70s, it would be where my mom would drive me to the International or the Hilton, and we went to the show together. We'd go to the coffee shop. Boy, I got had nice memories of the coffee shop. And we would say hello to Dad. He would take a quick break, or he was off shift, and he would say hi. I got to know a lot of the people that worked there with him, and they got to see me grow up. I had a bunch of them at my wedding. So that was our regular pattern. Then it got to where my mom would drop me off, and I'd go see Elvis by myself because I was a little bit older. And then the agreement was Dad would take me home, and we did that. So I've tried to do this with my memory. February 72, I'm going to guess. I had gone to the show, bought a bunch of souvenirs, and I knew to take everything off the tables. I had two record bags. This is when they... So collectors know that on stage, Elvis Now, Worldwide Hits, and maybe one other one, there were these plastic bags. Oh, can I talk to you about souvenirs? Oh, Lord. Anyway, I had bought all the posters, and I had these two bags full of menus and record catalogs and calendars and you name it. So you can say, okay, even though they're not mine anymore and they're spread out there somewhere through eBay or whatever, it's me that saved a bunch of those menus so that fans could have them down the road. And I remember it was, I call them the rainbow menus because the circles were all different colors. You walked in the showroom and the effect was a rainbow because there was like these six different colors for these menus. So we enter the hallway, and Dad says, I'm going to go change out of my work clothes. We're going to walk down this hallway. You need to behave yourself. Elvis might come down here. And I went, okay. He said, don't scream or anything, because I don't want to lose my job. I said, okay. And I'm thinking in my head, oh, my God, I might see Elvis. What are you going to do? Imagine that. And I have this winter coat on. I'm carrying two bags full of Elvis stuff, and I lose Dad. And it's like a rabbit warren down there. Corner, 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 corner. It's been changed since then, but a lot of it's similar. When I have gone down there to visit, and I see the walls, and I see the floor, the memory just smacks me like a wall. So I lose Dad. He's down there, and I'm trying to keep up. And I hear these voices, and I said, that might be Elvis. What if it's Elvis? You know, and my brain is going zing, zing, zing. Here he comes. And he's talking very animated with a bunch of guys around him. I could see a couple of them were security guards. And it's amazing how fast your brain can think. What are you going to do? Here's your moment. You should say something. Do you want this to pass you by and you regret it forever? So I turn around. And I go, hi, Elvis, as loud as I can. He hears it. He turns around, and he's wearing the jacket with the rainbow fringe. The fringe goes around just so magnificent with the colors and the swing. And he sees me, locks eyes with me, and he goes, hi, with the best smile I ever saw in my life, like flash bulbs going off. And then he turns around, and he's gone. And I... like a deer in the headlights. I just said hi to Elvis. And then my next thought was, I got no one to brag this to. In my high school, do they care? No. Just my, you know, my friend and my parents. And I catch up with my dad. And I think I tell him. I just remember him changing and taking him home. And then, of course, I got to tell my mother. I got to say hi to Elvis. So I remembered that very vividly. And when I told my friends about it, that my new Elvis friends on the internet, they would send me pictures. And this one friend of mine, bless her heart, she goes, she'll send me something. She goes, here, it's your jacket. I always get a kick out of that. And then when I saw it in person here at the Elvis-A-Rama Museum, but then I learned there was a brown version and a black version. Never mind. Back then, I just saw it, you know, being on display, and I went, oh, there's my jacket. That's the one I saw Elvis in. And then later on, I'm thinking maybe it's only one jacket, because I would see it, you know, something in an auction catalog. I finally make it to Memphis, and this is after the Elvis-A-Rama had been closed, and Graceland made a deal with the owner to buy everything. Boy, I got another story about that. And I see it on display. I said, there it is. Well, now it's in safekeeping, and I know it's never going to go anywhere again. And I just, you know, of course, I took a bunch of pictures of it, and I'm just staring really hard at it to memorize it. I even made my own version. I bought a French motorcycle jacket. I bought leather lace in multiple colors, tied it and wired it on, and I wore it to Memphis, and I love it. One fan came up, and she goes, I know what you have on. It was great, you know, so coming full circle like that. I still got the jacket in my closet. There was two other times I made it back there. The second time, Elvis's head was down, and they were really quiet. And they're walking through the back, through the hallway. So very nicely, I just said, hi, Elvis. And he raised his head, and he smiled at me and said, hi. And my heart was touched. I thought, you didn't have to do that. And he put his full attention and effort into it to say that to me. So sometimes I think, which do I like better? It was just so sweet. Then the third time, we made it all the way down to the dressing room, and there's these chairs, and Dad says, sit here and wait for me. Charlie comes out, looks at me, and I bet he was going, ah, she's no harm. And Elvis comes out really quick, still in his jumpsuit, towel wrapped around his neck, and they are off. They're gone. And I thought, yeah, well, I'm remembering the show and the effort he had put into it. I couldn't tell you when that was. When would that be? I can't. Maybe it was 76. That would have been a 10 o'clock show done at midnight where I would have met my dad. I don't know. No, I would have had a car back then. See, my memories are all jumbled up. But the way that they had their arms around Elvis, you know, I saw the towel around his neck and the way they scoot. I said, oh, I bet he wants to get to his room really, really quick. And that was the last time I saw him like that. Mm. So those are some of my favorite memories of interacting with Elvis. I have showroom memories that I haven't told you yet because I'm too busy telling you the dates.
Well, there's so many, but you mentioned that the 76 show that, you know, you thought that perhaps he should have been, you know, looking after himself, but he had commitments, etc. Was there a lot in the paper that you remember that were you worried too much about him, or was it just that you saw him like that?
There was nothing in the paper. I didn't know he was going to be like that till I walked in the showroom. I was in Hawaii, so I ended up collecting the menu. Oh, when would they have done? He was doing 10 o'clock shows. Those were cocktails. But I think there was a few dinner and midnight shows. See, I'd have to look at on the internet.
I think
now.
They did just weekend double shows.
I don't remember
shows,
the menu. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think they did weekend only two shows at that stage.
Yeah, so he did by that time. And that's a good contract arrangement. You know, I told you about all the performers. I think some of them would be here a week. I don't remember performers doing 2 weeks. I don't remember anybody doing a month. Now, the two shows a night, that was very, very normal. So for people to say, oh, he shouldn't have been working hard, everybody did that.
Yeah, it's
this is why some...
It's hard for us looking back at these things and thinking, why were they doing it? And you were there and you're saying that's what everybody did.
Exactly. Everybody had a dinner show and a midnight show. To really expand on that, we had the showgirls. On the dinner show, they had bras on. For the midnight show, they were topless. I was there. I saw it. I got to see Tom Jones because Elvis had canceled. A friend of mine, a pen pal from Canada, had come down. He says, well, Elvis isn't here. Let's go see Tom Jones because, you know, I'm here. I'm on vacation. I'm so glad he got me in there to go see it. Tom was great. He took me into a showgirl show. That was an eye-opener. but I'm growing up here. It's what I knew. And it was a beautiful show. Loved the music, the costumes, the way they moved around the floor, all of that. But, yeah, I was a little bit affected by, okay, you know, they're half naked.
tell me this then. How do you look at Las Vegas today when you think about what it was like in the 60s and 70s?
The big difference is how big and tall all the buildings are. Back then, you could see the skyline. Nowadays, you can't. It's walled in. I got to compare it to the first time I ever was in Chicago and all of those big buildings. I'm claustrophobic. I don't like this at all. You know, where's the sun? Where's the horizon? Because when you're in the desert, you don't have trees in the way. It's like you want to know where the horizon is. So now it's all built up with these huge buildings. Everything's digital. So I kind of miss the old-fashioned billboards where they put the letters up or they had the paper billboards. And it was cool to be around town, and Elvis billboards were everywhere. One of the things I did back then, I would beg my mom, okay, there's a billboard. Can you take me to it? And I would take my little 126 camera, and I would take pictures of the billboards. I'm sure those are floating out there. I found one of mine, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And then if it was close enough, I'd ride my bike. When I learned how to drive, I could go do it myself. One time, I rode my horse because it was so close. A few years ago, I'm looking through the booklet of a bootleg because the guy I worked with had everything. And when any of those came across my way and it was about Elvis in Las Vegas, I didn't just, you know, catalog it. I'm looking at this whole thing. And I come across this picture and I go, that's my picture. And look at, that's Deuce's ear in the bottom of the camera. And like, this is my picture. So I went crazy with the scanner and everything. And just recently, the picture popped up on the internet, and I had to tell my story. That's my picture. And I said where it was taken, which is, it was near the intersection of Sahara and Decatur, and it was on Sahara. And one of my collector friends said, oh, I thought that was the highway to L.A. I said, oh, no. Here I was, living in the residential area of Las Vegas, and the billboards were that close. So that was kind of thrilling. To see that one of my pictures made it to a bootleg. So that was some of the crazy things I could do. I couldn't take a picture in the showroom. I remember walking in the hotel and having the banners everywhere. Oh, to go to the souvenir stand. Now, my parents had a small allowance, and then later when I was a babysitter and when I had a job packing groceries. I got to say, I was the first female grocery packer in Las Vegas. So there's my contribution to ERA and women's rights. So, I go all over the place with these memories. What was I saying? Remind me. The hotel and everything.
Hotel.
So the souvenir booth, that's it. Yeah, you can edit this. So I always look forward to the souvenir booth. I had the money for the show. One of the super exciting things I learned was to call the hotel 3 months ahead of time and ask them what was the dates of Elvis's performances so I could, you know, schedule it with my parents. When was I going to go? But the souvenir booth, oh, my God, the posters and the pictures, just so incredible. And, yes, I went shopping. And I love my posters, and I'm glad to say, even though I didn't have my collection anymore, I was able to recreate it thanks to dealers and friends and eBay. Thank God for eBay.
Thank God for you guys buying it back then, that they're still around. I mean, I've got a few menus, and they mean a lot to me because they connect me to that.
Yeah,
as it does for you.
Yeah, that like a friend of mine in Hamburg, I bought, I don't know, a couple of menus or pictures. I don't remember. Oh, no, photo albums. And I gave it to him, you know, because we're like brother and sister. That's what we call each other. And I gave him a photo album. It wasn't in the best condition, but I had bought a bunch of stuff off of a dealer friend of mine. And, you know, in German, he couldn't help himself. He goes, "This is the original." And I said, "Yeah, this is the original." And he was like, "Look at me. I have goosebumps everywhere." He was so thrilled. And I also mailed him a poster that he put on the wall. He put pins in it. I'm like, "No, you're not supposed to put pinholes in it. You're supposed to frame it." So, oh, well, one of those things. Because my posters, I tried not to do pins. My mom was a nurse, and she had this medical tape that we called it hospital tape. And I would roll it up and put it on the back of my posters to stick to the wall because I did not want to put pinholes in it. See, there I am being a collector already as a teenager.
Thanks to Sue from Vegas for joining us today. And don't forget to look out for her Facebook page, the Viva Las Vegas Club, to contact her and find out more about the King in Vegas.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Elvis Cast. Subscribe or follow the show on your podcast platform of choice. Just search for Elvis Cast. All the links and contact information can be found on my website, elviscast.com.
If you'd like more information about this episode's special guest, check out the show notes in the description. Thanks for listening to the Elvis Cast.